Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital. With me today is a leader in the impact asset management business. She's a visionary, a risk taker, and CEO of TriLink Global. Gloria had an accomplished career on Wall Street and is now using those skills to make the world a better place while delivering meaningful returns and helping connect investors to their investment capital. Gloria also created an amazing opportunity for me to transition out of the first half of my career while the idea ultimately for Common Good crystallized. So with that, Gloria, I want to first of all say thank you. And I want to say I really appreciate you spending some time with us. For those of you who know Gloria, I don't know there's anybody that works harder than you. And now I'm sure COVID has affected this, but I think about sending you a text or an email. And I think I get the out of office reply every time I send it. And that's because you're usually jet setting around the world looking at different deals. So you'll get to hear more about that. But welcome and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with this. Where are you located today?
In beautiful Manhattan Beach, California.
And have you been traveling much or is COVID?
So interestingly enough, my husband and son and I have traveled more in the last year than we had probably in the previous 5 years, but it was all for vacation, personal trips, visiting our grandkids. And even back as far as May of 2020, we were traveling. And it was interesting because we couldn't travel for business simply because no one was in the office to see you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't afraid to travel. I was happy to, but a lot of our travel also was international and we couldn't leave the country. So I've been traveling, but it's different travel.
It is. Let's step back because you've got a fascinating story. Why don't you give us a little bit of background on yourself, maybe where you grew up, where you went to school, and then just a high level of your career.
I grew up in Ohio, and I tell everybody it is a great place to be from. It was amazing growing up in the Midwest, but I got recruited to California in 1984, and I came here not knowing a single person in my, mid-20s. My mother actually was one of the reasons that I ended up coming here. And to the day she died, she used to say, I would have never told her that if I thought she was going to stay. So what my mom said when I was deliberating was, honey, if you don't go, you're going to always wonder what your life would have been like. But if you go and you don't like it, you can always come back. And she said, I was so convinced you were going to come back. I didn't think there was any risk in saying that. Yes. And I went to University of Dayton. I went to school to be an elementary school teacher. And I thought I liked kids, but I do like kids, actually. In my very first semester of student teaching, which was my last year of college, I came home on my first day and I was in tears. And I said to my mom, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I really don't think this is what I should do or what I want to do. I think it's going to be terrible. And being a good mom, she said, oh, honey, it's your first day. Like, stick it out, right. See how the semester goes. And on my last day of student teaching, I came home like much more determined and said, Mom, this is not going to work. Mm. I need a new plan. And so my best friend's mom was the HR director at a bank in Ohio that had a trust and investment department. And it was back in 1979. And so my very first job in finance was typing stock certificates and balancing shareholder records.
Wow.
Manually before DTC.
Wow. So now how did you know that that's what you wanted to do versus?
I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't.
Okay.
I just said, I got to try something else.
Okay.
And so my dad was a serial entrepreneur. He owned a lot of businesses, very successful businesses. And I had a glimpse of business, right? Because of that, but I had no concept of finance or what it really meant, the financial world or Wall Street or anything. But once I got into it, I was fascinated and I loved math and I loved logic. And so all of those things were like, wow, this is so cool. And I just kept getting promoted, and every new thing I did was even cooler than the thing before. So it was fun.
So let me ask this question here. I mean, and you just said it very quickly, but there's probably a ton to unpack there. You said you just kept getting promoted. Well, why did you keep getting promoted? I mean, what, as people listen, you'd love for everybody to say, hey, I just kept getting promoted, but you were doing something right. What was it?
I can tell you what I did, and I'm going to only assume that that's the reason.
Okay.
I have always had a strong faith, and so I lived every day to honor God. And so in my work, I would just go in and I would work really hard, give it my very best, stay really focused. And naturally, I am a problem solver and I really care about people. So the three things that I always did was work hard, solve problems and help people. Mm-hmm. And loved what I did. I'm sure that helped too. Mm-hmm. So I always had a passion for whatever I was working on because I loved it. As a result, I really did just keep getting promoted. I got recruited. I kept getting promoted. So it wasn't like I ever said, oh, that's my plan. That's what I want to do. It always was, how can I honor God with what my skills and passions are?
So tell us then a little bit about your career, because it's obviously, I mean, this is an outsider, but who knows you? It's obviously very impressive from a worldly perspective. And then obviously when you transition, I think it's even more impressive. But give us a little background of your career path.
You already heard I started in Ohio, and then I got recruited to California by Security Pacific Bank. And by 1991, I was the CEO of a subsidiary of Security Pacific, an asset management subsidiary. Then a year or two later, we got bought by Bank of America. And then I became the CEO of Bank of America Capital Management, which was all of the subsidiaries rolled up under Bank of America. So we were about a $35 billion global asset manager. And then a few years later, we got bought by Nations Bank. As a Bank of America executive, it was a great opportunity, actually, to make a change. And so I really back then started looking at, what might I want to do different? That was 98, 99. Ultimately, I got recruited by Deutsche Bank to be the CEO of their North America Private Wealth Management Division, about a $50 billion firm. Mm. The cool thing is I took over at a time when they had just done a whole bunch of acquisitions and they had never integrated the private wealth management businesses from those acquisitions. So when I took over, we had five different business models with five different brands, basically serving the same client. And we were losing $130 million a year. So this is true when I tell people they laugh, but I go, it's really true that one of the big reasons I decided to take the job was because I thought you can only go up from here, right? I mean, it's so bad. You can only make it better.
Yep.
And so in 3.5 years, basically myself and our management team had orchestrated the most successful turnaround of a division at Deutsche Bank. It was awesome. I mean, it was exhausting. But it also was really fun. And then the accomplishment of it, right, was great. We were paid a lot of money. We were given a lot of career accolades. But on the day that we got our first quarter results in 2005, so our financial results came out for our division, and we were hitting our 25% profit margin target, I took my management team out to the Yale Club to celebrate. And walking back to my apartment that night, I just had this moment like, wow, that's it. And I know everybody's felt let down after you accomplish something, right? Mm-hmm. But it's something I couldn't shake. Mm-hmm. And the next day I was doing a quick trip to Florida to visit our office there. I was walking out the door, still having, had this issue all night long of, really my life has no meaning, no purpose. I love it, but I'm not helping the world. Mm-hmm. And my brother-in-law had given me a book years before that was still sitting on my coffee table. So I grabbed it as I was running out the door. I was kind of searching for answers. And the book was called Halftime. And you and I have discussed it. And you went through a similar experience, I know. But for me, it was that light bulb for that moment, right? Of wow, if I look at my whole life as a football game that I play in two halves, I do want to be more deliberate about the second half. As you know, we just talked about this. I just kept getting promoted, right? So it wasn't like I said, oh, I have a plan. This is what I'm going to do. I have to say, I didn't even necessarily think at the time, like, oh, you know, what is my purpose? Is this it? Mm-hmm. It happened, right? Mm-hmm. And it was fun and it was awesome. And I wanted to be more deliberate about, well, so really, what is my purpose? You know, growing up in Ohio and in the 60s and 70s, I grew up in the church, but always still believing that if you were going to serve God, you really had to be a missionary or a pastor. So there always was in the back of my mind, this feeling of, oh man, I'm just having a life for myself, right? And I'm not serving God.
Right.
And so part of my journey was, okay, so ultimately I retired at the end of 05 because I thought, you know what? I'm going to find my purpose. And, you know, I'm going to make my life of meaning and I'm going to give back to the world. So I started getting involved in causes I cared about, traveling around the world. But also I was, you know, involved in all these studies to try to find my purpose. And I call it now my 2-year wilderness journey.
Yeah.
Because that's what I felt. I felt like I was wandering around in this wilderness searching. At the end, what turned out to be the end, I didn't know it was going to be the end, right? But in a 2-week period, an amazing thing happened. And all of these different people from different phases in my life, different parts of my life, my business life, everything, all reached out to me in this 2-week period. And all these people started telling me what a difference I made in their life. Hmm. And at the same time, I was reading this book called Business as a Mission. Really and truly, I felt like it was all becoming clear.
Yep.
And suddenly this heaviness lifted from me. And I thought, oh, business was my mission. And so I really was, you know, living a purposeful life.
Yep.
Once I felt free to like pursue business as a purpose, then I felt like, oh, wow. So that means I don't have to give up doing what I loved. Mm. Now, I was also at a point in my life where I thought, but I want to do it in a different way. Mm-hmm. And shortly after all this had happened, I was invited to join a think tank discussion group in London. And our topic was, how do we use capitalism to solve social problems? Mm. Having spent my entire career in the asset management business, serving every type of client, right? Mass affluent, high net worth, and institutional, I really felt like I had a unique perspective that a lot of people coming at that same issue didn't have. And I thought, wow, that's how I can find purpose and do what I love. And then I started TriLink in 2008. And it really was with the idea that we could prove that capitalism can be a force for good. Mm-hmm. It starts with having real investable solutions that also create impact and helping connect investors with their capital. Mm-hmm. So you and I've had this conversation many times, but I had real life experience at Deutsche Bank where I was able to so clearly see that investors, particularly wealthy ones, had two buckets. They have their philanthropy bucket and they have their investment bucket. And the two do not match. The other thing that in that observation, I concluded is, wow, they don't care what happens with their investment dollars. In fact, they usually delegate that to someone else. And so what we need to do is connect them to the power they have as investors to change the behavior of companies they invest in. Obviously, I'm preaching to the choir here because I know you embrace that. So it's been fun. It's been a fun journey. And so when you and I first met and we talked about you making this transition, that's why I just, you know, I embraced you. I was like, sure, come here. Let's help you. We need more really smart people who know what they're doing in this industry, making a difference. So.
Well, it's you are one of those pillars, you know, in my life as a person who was there at the right time and then gave me the opportunity. And then as well as just it's been fun being a part of and watching what you've accomplished. So this interview today is probably more personal than normal, but I'm so grateful for you. I mean, I can remember when we met before I'd even switched careers. We met, I think, in New York at a bar and had our discussion. And in fact, I remember even articulating, and I don't always use this phrase anymore, but I remember talking about feeling called to help redeem capitalism, which is kind of a different way to say what you just talked about. And what's crazy is that was, honestly, that would have been probably 7 years ago. And you just look at where this industry has gone, it's mind-boggling.
It is mind-boggling. And I know you and I have talked about this before, too. I really thought it would happen way faster than it happened.
Yep.
But the good news is it is happening and people are realizing it, but it has taken, you know, a lot of effort and energy to raise, you know, just keep waving the flag. And
well, yeah, one of my guys the other day, he's getting his MBA. And so he was showing me something you and I have seen multiple times, and it's the whole adoption curve. And I saw it again, it was like, oh, yeah, that's what we're. So you were clearly on the innovator side. I still think, well, we have still yet to hit the mass, but we're getting closer and closer and closer to general acceptance of this, which is really cool.
It is so cool. I mean, because to me, it's common sense.
Yes.
Right? It just makes so much sense. And it's really interesting because I do think to a lot of the younger generation, it does make sense to them too. And the reason I say that is you can see it in their buying habits, right? So maybe they don't have money to invest yet, but they do make buying decisions around the good that a company does, or, you know, that the bad that a company might be doing and they don't buy from them. So there's a lot more awareness at that level. I do think that it will, the next generation, long after I'm gone, I think it will be just what you do, right? Which is what my goal always was to get there. And I do think we'll get there eventually.
Do you think, like, this conversation that you and I are having, do you think if you were to, historically, when you talk about this the way that we just have, do people look at you and say, wait, are you really a capitalist? Do you ever hear that discussion?
Yes, yes.
And so what's your response?
I can't hide the fact that I'm a capitalist in many ways, right? I mean, you look at my career, you just look at my life and you go, well, yeah, of course. And I'll answer the question, I promise. But I just want to tell you a quick, funny story. So when I first started TriLink, and then Paul Sanford, our chief investment officer, came to join me, and he started experiencing, you know, this whole dynamic in the first year or something. And he looked at me and he goes, oh my gosh, you can't win, because everybody on Wall Street looks at you as a sheep in wolf's clothing, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody on the impact side looks at you as a wolf in sheep's clothing. And so you just can't win either way you go. And I basically said, no, it's true. And I try to let people get to know me, because then they realize that I'm much more balanced than that.
Yeah.
That I really do care about the world and I care about how companies behave. And I do really believe that it's the way to change the world.
Yeah.
So yes, at heart, I'm a capitalist, right? Because I believe that's the way to make a difference.
I could go down this whole path, which I'm not right now. So maybe another time. I feel like there's this struggle right now between socialist ideas and capitalism.
Yep.
Which we won't go down, but for a future time. So, okay. So let me back to kind of the thought process here. So how would you best describe yourself in the context of where you're at in your life journey right now?
That is a great question, Jeff. And I would say I'm not in the wilderness part.
Okay, remember, that's good.
I'm not out of that. So that's good, right?
That's good.
Now I do feel like I'm on path to achieve my purpose. I don't know, from a more practical perspective, I learned when I retired that that is not for me. So I don't ever plan to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to work till I die. As long as I'm making a contribution and, you know, things are fine to do that. But I feel like I'm on a good path where I can make even a bigger difference for other people. One of the things I've been exploring lately is how, as a female in the investment world, as a female founder of a business who cares about impact, like, how can I help other females? Mm-hmm. And I would say, not that I never cared before, of course I did, but I didn't have the bandwidth to think about that. And, you know, maybe that comes with age too. I don't know. But I do feel like that's a newer part of my journey, is to say, all right, let's get a little more focused in how I personally can help. And, you know, my business is on a path to help the world in one way, but now how personally can I do it using all of my own background and skills? And
well, I know you're not going to come out and say this, but I will, because it's what I see. Who you are as a person, what your career has been about, is I would love for more, especially women, but men as well, to see it, because it really is a model that one can follow. And I imagine, I mean, being a male, this isn't so much my story in the financial services, but there's not as many women leaders for women to look up to. So, and I think you do a phenomenal job of being who you are, frankly, whether you're male or female. So I just, as a friend, I can definitely see where you could have a significant impact on the lives of not only just people who are trying to get in the impact space, such as you did with me, but then other women as well. So I just encourage right. you to lean into that. I think your story is unique.
Well, thank you. You know, it just led me to think about something that was a Zig Ziglar quote. And I know you and I both love Zig Ziglar, and you asked me before about, you know, why was I successful? Why did I keep getting promoted? But one of the things that I always believed, and I heard him say it, and I was like, yes, that's true, is you can have everything in life you want if you just help enough other people get what they want. Mm. And, you know, the whole idea of servant leadership became a thing, right? Mm-hmm. But I always lived that way because I just believed that, right? If I helped everybody who worked with me to be successful, then I couldn't help them be successful. Again, it just makes so much sense.
So this next question is actually interesting, because I ask this question to everybody, but yours is actually more literal. Well, you can answer however you want, but it's a little more literal than I think most people have to answer it. Is how are you trying to change the world?
Yes. So it is more literal. You're right. I am literally trying to change how investors think about their capital. And I am trying to create investments that do literally create positive impact and change in the world. Mm-hmm. So yeah, everything I'm doing with my business, everything I'm doing with my life is literally trying to make big changes in the world. So
can you give us, and I don't want to get into the investment side of this just for compliance, but give us a story or two of maybe where capital that TriLink has deployed, how it is helping a business somewhere in the world.
It's really fun because we have a lot of companies that we have a couple that have even done videos for us, like, because we make such a difference. But our whole goal is, just from a concept perspective, if you look at successful economies like the US, like, you know, other advanced economies, and you step back and say, what really drives those economies? It's small and mid-sized businesses. They generate most of our GDP, all of our new job growth. So if you then put that lens on a growing economy that is not advanced, so it's a developing economy, what we call emerging markets, as long as all of the basics are there, like rule of law and legal systems and, you know, all of the growth fundamentals and things, if those countries are doing the right things to try to become advanced economies, then their small and mid-sized businesses need access to capital. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, that economy won't grow. If those small businesses aren't growing, they're not going to grow. And so our focus really has been on bringing capital to those growing businesses, not new startups, but growing businesses, so that they can create jobs and raise taxes pay taxes and raise salaries and all of those things that should lead to economic development. The stories of some of our companies, you know, not only are they just great companies, but they will tell you that without our capital, they couldn't grow, right? And so we have a company in Indonesia that's a cocoa manufacturer. I mean, they basically process cocoa and turn it into chocolate and sell it all over the world. And you go, well, okay, lots of companies, you know, are chocolate companies, but what makes it impactful? And if you listen to their story, they will tell you that, look, they were struggling because they couldn't grow, but they had all of these requests because their chocolate is really good and they couldn't, they had to invest a new plant and you know, a new, they wanted to run their plant all night long. So they needed to hire more people, but they didn't have the capital to do that. And because of us, we were able to give them a loan to be able to do that. And now they're growing. They're on a path for very successful growth, taking advantage of an opportunity. Because lo and behold, even in COVID, everybody eats chocolate. And so you know, like that's an example of a company that just a basic company where we made a difference. And we have other companies that are more, their objective as a company is more impactful. We have a waste to fuels processor in Mexico that turns solid municipal waste into low carbon jet fuel, right? And you go, okay, in the business model, you can see impact, but we're also creating jobs in Mexico. And through all of our businesses, we're making an impact in different ways. I got to tell you, when I could travel, it was so fun to be able to meet those business owners because they're so grateful to have access to capital. And we try to communicate that to our investors. Like, you have no idea what a difference you're making. It matters.
It's a couple of things you said just resonate with me is one, you just look at, and I think things have changed post-COVID, but even this idea of having a job and having meaningful work, I think people appreciate even more, especially here in the US. I think we took that for granted. And then your concept of, you know, I could imagine some people are listening and like, well, of course you need capital and that's why you go to bank. And but they don't even realize that what you guys do, like there isn't capital readily flowing. And it's a gift.
It is. And we do miss that in the U.S., right? Because we are so blessed to live in the U.S. and have, you know, a really advanced capital market structure. And we have, you know, money flowing that it is, you know, think about it, even with the COVID vaccines. I mean, you know, anybody who wants one can have one. You know, you look at some of these markets and that is not the case. Yeah, we are. We do have a different perspective here.
Well, even just as you're talking, you hear about some of the social and political division in our country. And sure, that be there's probably real reasons for it. But then you just have this discussion for 2 minutes and you're like, yeah, but there, man, this is a phenomenal place to live.
Right.
And we have so much to be thankful for. So
we do.
All right. So you'll have another interesting perspective on this. And I'm curious if you're going to answer this earlier on in your life or if you'll answer this, you know, once you switched over. But when did you realize the power of capital?
I was probably, I don't know, 20 years into my career when it dawned on me. I mean, here I am as an investor investing in companies, right? I mean, that's what you do as investors. And all of a sudden it dawned on me that, wow, watching my dad as a business owner in Ohio really influenced my view of investing. And the reason I say that is, you know, my dad was a great person, but he always considered all of his stakeholders. So anybody that he shared the business with, you know, there was, they shared equity, all of the employees like were like family, all of the suppliers, even for his businesses were like family. And he treated everybody really well and did the right things by people. And then whenever he would have a success, financial success, he would do something for the community. Like he built a swimming pool, you know, built a park. And then lo and behold, every time he started a new business, right, then people would, you know, want to participate. And it's so interesting because it, again, it wasn't until much later in my career that it dawned on me like, wow, these companies are the ones who can make a difference. They have the power to change the way we do things. And that's really when I think I realized the power of capital and capitalism as a concept. You know, I started looking at like microfinance then and socially responsible investing. But even then, I always believed that companies that do good are always going to outperform those that don't, right? And so it was kind of a common sense thing, more than you probably want to know. But
No, that's great. But no, actually, that was, it's quite interesting that you answered it that way because on one respect, if people knew, you know, I don't know the exact number, but let's just say you guys have done, you're close to $1.5 billion in loans these days.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So your company has loaned out about $1.5 billion to these companies all across the world. And yet, if anybody could answer the power of capital, I mean, you have hundreds of stories you could answer through that. Yep. But you actually chose to go back to when you grew up seeing your dad. I don't know what to make of that, but it's quite interesting that's really what you drew on, even apart from, but probably that's what helped lead you to do what you're doing today.
And that's what I was just going to say. I do think it helped lead me to what I'm doing now.
Yeah. All right. So then you got capital on one side, and you just mentioned it, I think, in passing. You know, companies can use capital for good, but then there's plenty of examples where capital isn't used for good. So how do you think about stewardship?
I think it's an important responsibility for all of us as people, but particularly us as investors, because we have resources that a lot of people don't have. And if we have resources, then I think we need to use those resources responsibly. You know, you can look at that in the two bucket way, which is, well, I have this great stewardship over my little philanthropy bucket and I'm doing good with that. But I would prefer to look at it holistically and say, wait a minute, I need to have good stewardship of all of my resources, not even just my money, but even my gifts that I've been given or my strengths or whatever. It's a responsibility I have to do good with those things. I think being good stewards of our investment capital particularly means that we are paying attention to what the companies that we're investing in are doing and making sure that we are doing that responsibly.
All right. So this is the last question. Well, it's the last formal question. So who knows? Maybe I'll ask you more. And I always preface this because I'm a guy, if you were to say, like, what's your favorite movie? I'm like, I don't have a favorite movie. I've got five favorite movies. So I'll preface it with that. And if you want to throw in a few others, you can. If you could have one dream come true for your life, what would that be?
You know, thinking of it as what I do most of the time, which is work, I would say I would like TriLink, which is, you know, my company that I started, to live long beyond me and grow and make a difference in the world forever. And again, long beyond my life. From a personal perspective, you know that I have a son with Down syndrome, and I would so love for him to find somebody and get married and, you know, he's happy. So you can't even say be happy, just sort of, you know, be in a relationship, loving relationship with someone for his life, because that's what he wants. So
do you think that could happen?
Sure. Yeah. You know, the biggest issue is just meeting people, especially now. Mm-hmm. But I believe it can happen.
Well, I'm not a fortune teller, but I will say this. I think knowing where the world is going, seeing that you stepped out, you tell me, was it 10 years ago, roughly, let's just say. Yeah. I think TriLink is in an amazing position. I know some of the stuff that you guys are working on and things where they're at. I wouldn't be surprised at all. In fact, I would bet money that TriLink will last well beyond you. So I'm going to be cheering for TriLink. Awesome. One day we will celebrate on the other side of this life and of what TriLink has done in your life as well. So,
well, I look forward to it and celebrating Common Good.
Thank you so much for sharing a little bit more about you. I know that you're well-respected in the industry, but I hope that more and more people get to hear about your story and who you are and understand more about the meaning behind TriLink and what you're all about. So don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer. We'll see you next time. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.